And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but it's hard to believe you're a creation of God. Believing you were once a single-celled amoeba that accidentally evolved to apehood and then stopped swinging in the trees long enough to become human? That's easy. But believing that a beautiful yet complex machine like the human body was actually designed by a master scientist and master artist named God? Nah. Think about this for a minute. Think. If it's so easy to believe that people can create, why is it so hard to believe that God can create? We create all the time. We build buildings. We write stories. We paint paintings. We draw cartoons. Couldn't God have drawn you from his imagination, much the way those cartoonists in Denmark drew Muhammad from their imaginations? Talk about creation. They not only created cartoons, the cartoons themselves went on to create things. They created chaos. That's right. The story is not going away. People are being murdered now all over the world over a cartoon. Over a cartoon. You see, the cartoonists made two mistakes. First, they drew Muhammad. The religion of Islam doesn't permit that. Of course, these cartoonists weren't Muslims, but that doesn't matter. They must obey Muslim law anyway, even if they had a reason for drawing the cartoon, such as protesting violence in the name of Islam, which leads to the second mistake. These guys had the nerve. They had the unmitigated gall to actually call Muslim extremists violent. In protest to this false accusation of being violent, Muslims are killing people at embassies and other locations all over the planet. That ought to clear up the misunderstanding. Okay, we learned our lesson. I guess you guys aren't violent after all. Don't we feel like the fools now? Of course, it didn't take long for leftist pundits to jump to the defense of Muslim extremists. The left has this uncanny ability to defend everything evil and condemn everything else. Confused? Don't be. The left will explain it to you. You see, the artists are responsible for the violence. Oh, I suppose the killers also might be a little responsible too, but we need to understand their anger because these drawings were in bad taste and these drawings didn't show any sensitivity. But it's never in bad taste to introduce my co-host because she was drawn from God out of his imagination and God draws even better than the cartoonists of Denmark. Say hello to Sharon Cashard.
Thank you, Bob. It is so good to be here, and I am so excited for our next segment when Laurie Lewis comes and joins us. Should I let the audience know?
Yes,
now?
Because she probably don't recognize that name, right. But they will recognize the group that she was a part of for many years.
She was a part of it from 86 to 89, the Mamas and the Papas.
Of course, the Mamas and the Papas were big in the 60s, but they continued after Mama Cass died,
right.
And after people like Michelle Phillips and Mackenzie Phillips left the group.
Mm-hmm.
And
she replaced Mackenzie Phillips,
if I'm not mistaken.
From 86 to 89, and then Mackenzie came back, and then she replaced her again for two more years from 1990 to 1992. So she'll be with us shortly.
Yes, and we'll have a good show. It'll be a very positive show having her on. She became a Christian. We'll hear her testimony. She also has some interesting stories about other rock artists. You'll hear how some of your famous favorite rock artists related to Christianity and God. In the meantime, we've got a little bit of news to catch up with. So Sharon, back to this cartoon stuff. Now, we all grew up on cartoons. You and I are baby boomers. If we didn't grow up on cartoons, nobody did. Did you ever think the day would come when a cartoon could practically start a world war?
No.
It's absolutely amazing. The only time I ever associated bombs with cartoons was when I watched Bugs Bunny battling Marvin the Martian. Remember that little short guy with the
right.
with the Roman helmet? Where's the kaboom? There's supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom. I am so tired of hearing that these cartoonists from Denmark were in bad taste. And the conservatives are saying it too.
Mm-hmm.
Geraldo Rivera, who's at least conservative on the war on terror, even called it racist today, which is utter nonsense. I'm tired of people apologizing. I'm tired of hearing that it's bad taste. Bad taste for speaking out against terrorism? Bad taste? Excuse me? I was grateful to see some European newspapers have the spine to speak out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think they had it in them. If anything, these guys should be given the Pulitzer Prize. That will never happen, of course. We can give Yasser Arafat the Nobel Prize for being a successful terrorist, but we can't award a prize to a cartoon that protests terrorism. Bad taste, we keep hearing from the left. And yet when Reverend Lowry spoke at Coretta Scott King's funeral and looked out at the audience where President Bush and Laura Bush sat, he decided to complain that we had been lied to and there had been no WMDs in Iraq. Yeah, now that had a lot to do with the memory of Mrs. Martin Luther King. And that wasn't in bad taste at all, insulting the president who came to the funeral to show his respect, but drawing a cartoon character that denounces violence, that's in bad taste. Exploiting somebody's funeral for political purposes, on the other hand, that's not in bad taste. Have you listened to some of these liberals come on TV and explain why what happened at the funeral was really good taste? Mm-hmm. You have not seen such comedy or double talk since Lucy Ricardo had to explain one of her harebrained schemes to Ricky. Oh, and then Jimmy Carter, as if we hadn't heard enough from Reverend Lowry, Jimmy Carter at the same funeral had to remind us that Martin Luther King had been wiretapped. Of course, he'd been wiretapped by Bobby Kennedy, a Democrat, but it just goes to show what we've always known about Republicans. And of course, it's a little hint, hint, nod, nod. Get the picture, Mr. Bush. You are also wiretapping. Jimmy, we need to talk. Jimmy, you're not president anymore. Deal with it. You're not president anymore. And you didn't do a particularly good job when you were president. In fact, your presidency sucked raw eggs with two straws. But Jimmy, people at least felt that even though you were a bad president, you were a good man. Now you don't even have that anymore. Exploiting a funeral to talk about what bad shape our country is in, just to take a shot at our sitting president, our president who incidentally is trying to clean up the mess you started years ago by letting terrorists know that the United States is more than happy to make deals with them. And you haven't changed much, have you, Jimmy? Saying that now we should deal with Hamas. But Jimmy, you are right about one thing. Our country is indeed in bad shape. Yes, we are a country of inequality. For example, women are still being suppressed. Oh, you don't believe me? You want to tell me about how more women are going to college than men these days? You want to tell me about how we now have laws giving women time off from work during pregnancy and equal wages? Well, yeah, all of you, you could say something like that to me and try to confuse people with the facts. But I'm telling you, facts notwithstanding, the status of women in our country is in great jeopardy. Case of point, this just in from the Boston Globe and FoxNews.com. Brockton, Massachusetts, a first grader was suspended for 3 days after school officials said he sexually harassed a girl in his class by allegedly putting two fingers inside the girl's waistband while she sat on the floor in front of him. Oh, my God! Now, the kid said that she touched him first. The kid said they were just playing. The kid said he only touched her shirt by putting his finger in the waistband. The girl said he touched her skin by putting his finger in the waistband. Sounds like a case of he said, she said. But not really, because the only thing that matters anymore is what she said. And this is very understandable. After all, she might have a mother or a teacher who graduated recently from one of our universities, where certain women's studies professors are teaching that all men are rapists. Not some, all. And even your husband, you see, when he's having sex with you, he may be claiming to do it out of love, but in reality, he's raping you. Or maybe the PTA is just listening to organizations like Now, saying that a woman will never lie about such a thing as harassment. Of course, Now also said that Juanita Broderick lied when she claimed Bill Clinton raped her because, well, he was a pro-choice president, and pro-choice presidents don't rape. But other than that, a woman will never lie about such a thing, even a little girl. She may be a kid, and some kids may lie, but some kids will never lie. And how do we know the difference? By gender, silly. You actually needed to ask. The kids who are males will always lie, and the kids who are females will never lie. And if you don't know that, well, you have not stepped into the 21st century, and you are out of the mainstream, and you are a fanatic. So we must assume she's telling the truth. Okay, I'll go along. I'm not a hard nose. I'm a reasonable guy. Sound reason tells us she's being truthful. So we must conclude that all the facts are in. And here's the fact we are left with. Assuming she's telling the truth, a 6-year-old boy was charged with sexual harassment because he touched a waistband. That's it. Now, I know this is going to be an unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway. Being that he's only in the first grade, couldn't we just tell him that what he did was wrong and explain why and let that be the end of it? After all, little Johnny hasn't been around long enough to take a women's studies class and learn how evil he is just because he happened to be born a male. I know. It's a bad solution. It's a bad solution for two reasons. First, it takes some actual thought on the part of the school board instead of lawsuit-wary paranoia. And second, it allows kids to just be kids. It allows for the fact that since he's only 6 years old, we may still have to teach him some things about right and wrong. A few years ago, we had another case, different kid in grade school, kissed a girl on the cheek. He was suspended and charged with, you guessed it, sexual harassment. Mm. Little girls have been chasing boys and kissing them on the cheek for years. That may have to stop now, but I'll tell you what won't happen. No girl will ever be sent home charged with sexual harassment. You and I will not live to see the day. I heard a child interviewed on the radio once. I believe it was the Rush Limbaugh show. And he said he and his friends during playtime, during recess, just avoided girls because they were afraid of being accused of sexual harassment, even though it sounded like they really didn't know what it meant. That is the legacy of our political correctness. We are destroying the ability of our children to ever grow up and develop meaningful relationships with one another. Well, speaking of being meaningful and speaking of being genuine, it had to happen sooner or later. Arthur Butts, a tenured engineering professor at Northwestern University in Chicago, is denying that the Holocaust took place. Isn't that nice? Just when you thought our universities couldn't get any worse, just when you thought it couldn't get any more anti-Semitic with all the historical revision about Israel and the Palestinians, just when you thought that the teaching couldn't get more outrageous than Ward Churchill saying that 3,000 victims of 9/11 are Nazis, the same Ward Churchill who one whole year later still teaches at the University of Colorado, I should say. Well, now, finally, the circle at our universities is complete. Where there is evil, there is always a stupid, ignorant statement about Jews. Like Iranian dictator Ahmadinejad. It's not enough that he wants to submit the whole world to Islam with one hand while developing nuclear arms with the other hand. He also had to say that the Holocaust never happened. It's just part of the package, it seems. I think when you go to bigot school, they don't allow you to graduate unless you first prove that you can make outrageous comments about Jews. It's part of the orals. It's included in the doctoral dissertation. The Holocaust never even happened! Never happened. Never mind the testimonies of survivors, the testimonies of Nazi war criminals who publicly confessed at the Nuremberg trials. Never mind the films of the bodies, the films of the ovens, the films of the gas chambers. Never mind you could still go to Poland and visit Auschwitz concentration camp for yourself and see all these mechanisms. Never mind the displays at the Holocaust Museum. It never even happened. Now, when some idiot dictator says this, we accept it because we expect dictators to lie through their teeth. When the KKK or Young American Nazi Party says this, we accept it because, well, they're morons. When Muslim fanatics say this, we accept it because we know they're taught that Jews are devils in grade school. And yet, when a college professor says it, don't we have a right to expect a little bit more? Well, what about his rights? Does he have a right to freedom of speech? He does. Yes, our Constitution guarantees free speech, and yes, free speech is a double-edged sword. Unfortunately, the other edge of the sword is that people are free to say stupid things. But being free to say something stupid just means you can't get arrested for it. It does not mean the university has to pay the man for his stupidity. Don't start telling me this is a free speech issue for universities. I don't buy that for a second, because the university doesn't believe in free speech. In case you haven't noticed, let me break the news. There is no more free speech in universities. There hasn't been for a long time. If somebody wanted to teach a more conservative view of homosexuality, or a more conservative view of abortion, or a more conservative view of gender relationships, they would be booted out of there so fast their students would miss it all by blinking. They'd be gone with the winds of war and peace. Now, there is a wrinkle in the case of Professor Arthur Butts. His last name, incidentally, is spelled B-U-T-Z. I can't think of a better spelling, but there are regulations, and these regulations are spelled F-C-C. Anyway, Arthur Butz is an engineering teacher, and he doesn't speak about the Holocaust while teaching engineering. Aha! Caught in a technicality. Not really, because he does put his views out over the campus website. And the university says that they can't fire him because he has tenure. Now, there is a provision to dismiss someone, even under tenure, but only if there are unusual circumstances. I guess denying the Holocaust isn't unusual enough to concern us. Look, I don't know what kind of tuition you're paying your send your kids to school these days, but you've got to believe me, it's too much. Nobody seems to be concerned that a professor could deny the Holocaust. Nobody seems to be concerned that a professor could call the 9/11 victims Nazis. Nobody seems to be concerned that a professor could call America the most evil nation in the world, or that a professor could call all men rapists. Our professors do not concern us. Nothing they say can get them suspended. But if a six-year-old touches a girl's waistband, he gets suspended. A cartoon protests violence, that concerns us. Somebody pinch me in waking up, because I'm hoping that I'm just having a nightmare.
Oh, man. Good job. You are having a nightmare.
Well, it's a real nightmare, yeah, unfortunately. Real. I don't think it's one we're going to wake up from anytime soon.
Right. You mentioned the surveillance program. And
yes.
I heard a good line by Roberto Gonzalez, who said, we all agree, we all have a common ground agreement that we are able to, you know, go over there and shoot terrorists, but we're not allowed to listen to them on the phone?
Yeah,
it's nuts. It is nuts.
And I think if the Democrats weren't trying so hard to win a re-election, they'd be on the other side. If they were the ones in power,
yeah,
if they were the ones tapping
right.
these people, and of course, they've done all kinds of surveillance under previous administrations.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just their entire strategy can be summed up in one sentence. We hate George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever Bush is for, they're against. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Once Bush is out of office, we get a Democratic president, which would be another nightmare if that were to happen. Then we'd start seeing what they really think about things. But
and what would we be like as Republicans?
What would we be like as Republicans? Like we were under Clinton, very unhappy and speaking out, but hopefully really speaking out against the genuine issues and not just taking personal shots at them. Well, speaking of personal shots, you take a personal shot and join us after the break, because we are going to be coming back with Lori Lewis, who sang for a number of years with the Mamas and the Papas. We'll be giving you some good news. You will be waking up from the nightmare of the news and having a much more pleasant time. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Each night before you go to bed, my baby, whisper a little prayer for me, my baby, yeah. And tell all stars. This is dedicated to the one I love.
Monday, Monday, can't trust that day. Monday, Monday, sometimes it just turns out that way. Monday, Monday, it won't go away.
No, you are not caught in a 1960s time warp. You are still listening to The Bob Siegel Show. But we do have a very special guest with us today who sang with the Mamas and the Papas for a number of years. But that was just one of many exciting adventures she has had. And Sharon is going to introduce our very special guest, Lori Lewis, today.
This is exciting for me to do, Bob. Lori became a lead vocalist with the Mamas and the Papas in 1986 and stayed with them for 3 years. Then she returned again from 1990 to 1992, replacing McKinsey Phillips both times, and toured with them nationally and internationally. She also worked with Wayne Nelson quite extensively and with the Monroes, and created a CD with Gary Puckett and the Union Gap, and worked with the Buckinghams And did I get it all, Lori?
I think you got a lot of it. I'm sitting here going, wow, really? Did I do all that?
Well, and one interesting thing in all of this is you gave your life over to Jesus Christ at a certain time. And
right.
That is obviously a very interesting angle that corresponds with our show. Now, Lori, I'm trying to keep all this straight because, of course, a lot of people, when they think of the Mamas and the Papas, they think of Mama Cass. And after she passed away, the group did continue. We know that Michelle Phillips sang, and for a while she was married. Let's see if I got this right. She was married to John Phillips.
Correct.
You replaced Mackenzie Phillips, who's the woman that was on One Day at a Time.
Right.
Not a great sitcom, by the way. But I love the Mamas and the Papas. Didn't care much for One Day at a Time, but that wasn't Mackenzie Phillips' fault. But then she was John Phillips' daughter, but his daughter from a different wife other than Michelle Phillips. This is like As the World Turns, to keep all this straight.
Yes, as the stomach turns.
Okay, so the exact years you sang with the Mamas and the Papas again?
Okay, I came on board with the Mamas and Papas in 1986 after successfully finishing the Happy Together tour of 1985 with my husband Chuck, who was the drum tech and stage tech for the show. It was the Turtles, the Grassroots.
Oh, my goodness. What a reunion.
The Buckinghams, which that was a group I sang with.
This was a national tour?
A national tour.
Now, how many songs did each group sing on this national tour?
Let's see. The Gary Lewis and the Playboys, they started off with a 20-minute set, and then the Grassroots came on with approximately a 30-minute set. The Buckinghams did a 45-minute show, and the Turtles did an hour.
Now, what kind of audiences came out for these? Were they mostly baby boomers reminiscing, or were there a lot of younger people that, I mean, my kids grew up listening to me listen to oldie stations. They like the 60s stuff better than a lot of the 80s, 90s, which is what they were growing up in.
It was amazing. The tour lasted for 9 months, and I was very surprised at the different kinds of people that came. I mean, we got them from the baby boomers all the way up to the baby boomers' kids. I mean, it was amazing how many people were so in tune with that.
Well, one good thing about catering to baby boomers is that there's an awful lot of us, which is raising Social Security.
I know.
And we're all under this delusion that we're not getting any older. But my theory about this is that when we're in our 60s and 70s, there'll be so many of us to reinforce the delusion that there won't be enough people around to argue the point. So as one baby boomer to another,
That's very true. I think it was Grace Slick who said, if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. But I do remember the 60s, and I was just a young pup at the time, and I loved the the music of that era, the Turtles and the Buckinghams and the Grassroots and Gary Lewis and the Mamas and Papas, and all those bands were groups that I looked up to, and playing my guitar and learning how to play the piano. You know, I had the little sheet music to learn all their songs.
Well, that must have been pretty exciting because you were inspired by these groups, and then you got to sing for one of the very groups that you grew up admiring. That
exactly.
Must have been quite a thrill for you.
Exactly. It was very I was in awe at the time. And it started off with this 1985 Happy Together tour. And every once in a while on the tour, we would have special guests. Like Tommy James and the Shondells, and a couple of times the Mamas and Papas were our guest that would come along and join our little tour for a couple of shows, and that was Spanky McFarlane.
Right. Now, that's another group that's not as well known as the Mamas and Papas, but they had some big hits like Lazy Day, and I always loved Spanky and our gang, but a lot of people would get confused because they sounded so much like the Mamas and the Papas. Well, then it gets more confusing because as time went on, somebody from Spanky and our gang actually ended up singing with the Mamas, and it was Spanky himself.
Yes, herself.
Herself.
Yes. And people get confused about that, too, because we have our gang from the old,
old gang. Yeah.
Right, the old
gang. There's somebody named Spanky in our gang.
Yeah, Spanky. Yeah, but it wasn't called Spanky in our gang. It was just our gang,
with Spanky,
and all that.
Yeah,
but that's a different Spanky. But her name is Spanky McFarlane, Spanky Elaine McFarlane. But his name also is Spanky McFarlane.
Okay. Well, now I'm feeling better about having made such a dumb comment, because anybody would be confused by this stuff. But I loved both of them. I loved Spanky and our gang. I loved the Mamas and the Papas, even when I couldn't tell which one was singing, but it was great.
How did you actually, get the opportunity to replace Mackenzie Phillips? Had they heard you sing, or what happened?
Well, it was interesting because the following year, the Happy Together tour went on with the Monkey tour, and Spanky happened to be down in San Diego, and I had never really got a chance to really talk to her. I'd met her on the 85 tour. And Chuck, my husband, he was very close with Spanky. They were good friends during the tour in 1984. My husband had been on that tour as well. And so we all met together, and I made just a joke to Spanky, and I said, when are you going to get rid of that Mackenzie Phillips and get me to join your band?
Oh, little did you know they were maybe thinking of doing that?
Well, she said to me, sooner than you think. Oh. It was just a joke at
now,
the
you
time.
Can, it's just you and me and whatever thousand people are listening right
yes.
now. What exactly was the problem?
Well, at this time, and it's very widely known.
Okay.
I mean, it's been very publicized.
Then
and she's
to your
and she has been on the Oprah show and every other show in the world
okay.
talking
so
about
Oprah's
this.
Already given her a Kleenex box.
Absolutely.
And she can deal with it. Okay.
Mackenzie at the time was going through a very difficult time dealing with drugs. And at this point, she was pregnant. And I think she knew she had to make a decision here. Is it going to be the life of my child, or am I going to just continue on this lifestyle?
Oh, well, good for her. That
sounds so
like she made the right decision.
She was looking for someone to fill her place. And John Phillips had heard me sing with the Buckinghams. And he was very impressed. Obviously, I got a phone call from Spanky. And she said, John Phillips is going to call you tonight. And he's going to ask you to be in the Mamas and Papas. And I want you to say yes. And of course, who wouldn't?
Wow, I can just feel the adrenaline when
I
got
was
that phone call.
Totally
exciting.
Like, you know, he calls up, this is John Phillips. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is John Phillips. I mean, this is the person I listened to and bought all his records. And he was just an amazing person and a great songwriter. This man has written the most amazing songs. I mean, California Dream in itself has been in every movie. And I mean, that song is...
And there's a real...
Oh.
I mean, I know we all think of this as just rock, but there was a real pathos in a lot of those songs. I loved California Dreaming. It had a lot to say. Exactly what it had to say, I'm sure I don't know, but it always sounded like it had a lot to say.
It had a lot to say. I think it really did. And the more I listened to it, and I've never been sick of it. I mean, to this day, I sing in a cover band here in town. The Harmony Road is a group I play with, and we do it. I love singing that song, and it's a special song. But getting back to John calling me up, he said, I want you to go out. Now, this is back in 1986 before pretty much CDs weren't really big at the time. He said, I want you to go out and buy a couple of Mama's and Papa's Greatest Hit cassettes and learn the parts. And I said, which parts should I learn, the Cass parts or the Michelle parts? And he said, learn them both. You got 2 weeks to see you out in Vegas in 2 weeks. And then we're going to do 3 weeks at the Four Queens. Two shows a night for 6 nights a week. And then we're going to take off on November 5th, and we're going to go to England for a month. And I had never left the country like that. I'd been to Mexico. I'd been to Canada.
Oh, that doesn't count. You know. Mexico and Canada, that doesn't count. Yeah.
Well, if you're from Michigan, Mexico is a big deal.
That's true. Here in San Diego, it doesn't yeah. mean a great deal.
So I just woodshedded for the next couple of weeks and learned all the parts. And the first few shows was actually Spanky, Mackenzie, and I, all three of us on stage. So there were three mamas.
Three mamas and how many papas?
And two papas.
We three had mamas, two papas.
John Phillips and Denny Doherty. And I want to just go backtrack just a little
sure.
bit, backpedal, when we were talking about Mama Cass. She died in 1972, and that was after the Mamas and Papas broke up. They,
well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I always thought they were still pretty big when
no,
she
kind of went off a little bit on her own. But they had a really short time, I think about 3 years, if I'm correct. I could be wrong. But it was about 3 years, and they really didn't stay together much into the 70s
at all.
She
sang that song, You've Got to Make Your Own Kind of Music. Was that her own solo, or was that considered a Mama's and Papa's
song? No,
that
was Cass.
That was just
her
Cass.
Own thing.
So that was the beginning of her going off.
Right,
on her own.
And she passed away from a heart attack. She did not choke on a ham sandwich,
yeah.
like people say.
Well, I'd
that
heard
it's
chicken
not
sandwich.
True,
the story
yeah.
changes there. Okay, let's get this straight. Mama Cass did not die from choking on
no.
a ham sandwich. It was a heart
she
attack.
She did not. It, you know, when people have a heart attack, sometimes you know they do choke, and that's what happened to her.
How do these nutty rumors get started?
You know,
it seems
nutty
unfair with all the beautiful
and,
things she did to be
yeah.
remembered by something stupid that somebody said about her.
Right, and that's how gossip works.
Well, that's the magic of gossip,
the
folks,
magic
and we do it better
gossip.
Here than anywhere.
And we're here, you know, 40 years later to say that it's true. That
well,
Cass...
we love you, Mama Cass, wherever you are. We're going to continue with this interview. Lori Lewis will be back with us. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Each night before you go to bed, my baby, whisper a little prayer for me.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Cashard with our very special guest, Lori Lewis, who sang with the Mamas and the Papas, among other things.
Other things. Oh,
wait a minute. I noticed in the break that Chuck wanted to weigh in on that Mamas and Papas story.
Let's tell them who Chuck is. First, Chuck is Lori's husband. We did not introduce him during our last break because we had to have some law and order around here and one guest at a time. We had one day at a time. This is one guest at a time. But just as the Gospels give us different accounts of the life of Jesus from different points of view, we now have the Gospel according to Chuck because he has a different version of how Lori ended up singing with the Mamas and the Papas. Go ahead, Chuck.
Okay, so long story, very long story short. I was on the 84 tour with the Turtles, Gary Puckett, and then you get the Association and Spanky and our gang. That's where I met Spanky. And then in the 85 tour, they called me back out to set up drums again, which is a tour I refused to go on because they were so grueling. 380 shows in 160 days, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, so I didn't want to go. Had a great job. And then they kept asking. The week I finally said yes was the same week I lost my job with the band here in San Diego doing stage lights. So I called them back. Okay, I want this, I want that, I want this, and I'll come. Okay, so the very first day we're in Memphis, and I meet Lori for the very first time. I'm out back with Spanky doing things we won't speak of. And
wait, what were you doing?
What were these things?
Smoking something.
Okay,
I'm not sure.
I gotcha. This was in the old
something.
Days. This
anyway,
was free.
Anyway, so we got to meet. The tour went on, and long story short, again, I proposed to Lori at the end of the tour. And then,
How long was this tour?
Nine months.
When I got out there, it was an 8-month tour because they had fired the drum tech who was abusing substances too much and not showing up for the shows. So that's why they wanted me out there so bad. And so, when Lori, accepted the proposal and moved out here to San Diego, we lived, in Chula Vista in a very small, mobile home, very small room. And she was working as a car salesman. Not singing.
Woman.
And she actually
was
did
it a used car salesman.
She actually did a TV spot with
Marty Levine. I was working for Pearson Ford that stands alone on Claremont and El Cajon. I hope that you enjoy that little plug.
Let's charge them for the commercial. We just
after
did,
all right? that touring with the Buckinghams and everything, recording albums with them. I just noticed her spirit kind of going down and she was getting depressed. So I picked up the phone and I called Spanky and I said, you got to get this girl singing again. Is there any chance Mackenzie Phillips is on her way out and Lori can be in? And she said, well, we're going to give it some thought. And a week later, John Phillips called her home. I think I answered the phone and said, Lori, it's John Phillips on the phone.
Oh, good story.
So, yeah.
I think I like that a little bit better than yours.
She missed a little bit,
okay.
But that's okay.
Well, you know, Sharon, you like the part about them being engaged. I saw your face just light up. It's fun having a woman call. Your face just lights up, and I'm like, Now, this other hit that the Mamas and the Papas did, that's great. You got engaged. That's cool. Now, did you really meet Spanky? But that's why it's
good. We could get her on the phone.
We're still really good friends to this day. We go up and visit her, and she comes down once in a while. So we stay in contact. And
well, tell her we want her as a guest on our show. I want to meet Spanky.
Spanky's awesome. Okay. We love her.
Okay, well,
she's so fun.
I believe you. Get her on our show.
Okay,
we'll get her on our show.
I want to hear one of those records that you recorded in New York, like California Dreamin' or Monday when you were recording.
Right now, you have one. Yeah, this is a different version of California Dreamin' than what we're used to hearing on the radio.
Correct.
This is one that you sang in.
Let me explain quickly, because the two versions that you've heard of Monday and California Dreamin' that it's playing during the show, what happened was in 1992, the Mamas and Papas, collectively as a group, they were nominated for this RSH award in Germany. It's kind of like a Grammy.
Okay, a German Grammy.
A German Grammy.
It's a Grammy Awards.
It's the German.
This way, Fräulein, we've got some award. Okay, go ahead.
And they put on this big show, and I remember Connie Francis being there and a few other people that were it's like a blur. That whole time with the Mamas and Papas is a blur.
Anything that has to do with 60s is a blur.
Yeah, I think so. John Phillips, at the time, he had taken a break. He had he was getting a liver transplant at the time. So Scott McKenzie, the guy who sang "Are You Going to San Francisco? Be Sure to Have Flowers in Your Hair."
Oh,
yes,
I love that
wonderful,
song.
Wonderful singer and a great songwriter himself. He wrote "Kokomo" with John, and so Scott took his place. So at this point, we're going to Germany with Danny Doherty at the helm, the original singer of the Mamas and Papas, Scott taking John's place, and Spanky and I. But John didn't want us – they wanted us to lip sync on the show. They didn't want to use live Mamas and Papas. They didn't have ability to have a full band.
Oh, so they wanted to play the original recording?
Well, John didn't want to use the original recording. He wanted to use something fresh and new.
Oh, so that's how you made the one that we're going to
– we were in New York, and we recorded this in the studio. And it's a very rare recording. I mean, this is just a one-time
shot. So this never sold commercially?
No, not at
all. Wow. And you heard it here first.
Yes.
Okay. This is California Dreaming.
Yes.
New version with Lori Lewis singing with the Mamas and the Papas. Take it away.
All the leaves are brown.
All the leaves are brown.
And the sky is gray.
That's the Mamas and the Papas with Lori Lewis. I'm sorry, I've always wanted to do that. I've been a radio talk show host, but that's not the same as being a disc jockey. That was a great version of that song. It was true to the original, but it was different in some places. A little
right.
Bluesy, as you called it.
Yeah, well, Denny does this little thing on the second time when he comes back and all the leaves are brown. And it's
Now, I mentioned that before that there was a lot of passion in that song. When I moved from Arizona to Santa Barbara, I drove through the night because I didn't like driving through the desert in the daytime and I didn't have an air conditioner that had something to do with it. And I was taking this trip in June. And that was one of the songs I had that was playing. And it kind of stayed in my head even when it wasn't. But I was serious when I said that there's a pathos about it, but you were talking about the meaning. Now, the best I've made out, and I've really never taken the lyrics out and studied them, but it sounds like somebody a little bit disenfranchised. That's a stretch, somebody from the 60s disenfranchised. But you get the feeling that the person is almost reaching out and seeking for something, but
he doesn't quite know what. That's as far as my thinking has gone. What do you think that song means, Lori?
I think simply he's in New York City. It's freezing cold. It's the wintertime. All the leaves are brown.
Oh, I know. But this is the 60s. It's got to be more than just a road trip.
And he went for a walk on a winter's day.
No, no. There's so much more emotion.
He would be safe and warm.
This is the generation where they thought Puff the Magic Dragon was a joint, which it really wasn't. But
second verse, though, interesting. A lot of people.
That's where it gets symbolic and deals with the stratosphere of our intertwining emotions.
He says, I stopped into a church.
Right.
You know, and he got down on my knees, but he says, I pretend to pray. A lot of people think that that word is I began to pray, but it's pretend to pray.
I actually thought that. But I didn't feel like
he was saying a flattering thing about the church. And I'm thinking that he's pretending to pray because he's looking for a place to stay warm.
Oh, that's interesting.
See, now that's just my.
So you don't think there's any serious statement beneath the guy's just. Because when you said earlier that it has a lot of meaning, you just meant that it means he's driving from New York to. Come on, Lori. Help. Well, okay, well, we'll give Lori a chance to decide what that song truly means. Because it's the 60s, man. It's like groovy. It's like, wow. It's like, we'll be like right back. You're like listening to the Bob Siegel Show.
Words of love, so soft and tender, won't win a girl's heart anymore. If you love her, then you must send her somewhere where she's never.
This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Cashard, and our very special guest, Lori Lewis, is staying with the Mamas and the Papas, and her husband, Chuck Lewis, who did all kinds of tech help and set up drums and kind of a jack of all trades. He was the glue that held those bands together, and Lori sang with the Mamas and the Papas. She sang with Spanky of Spanky and Our Gang, who also spank. A lot of Hanky. Panky with Spanky. Is that what the name of the new group was? But Hanky Panky with Spanky and our gang. But anyway, you said Spanky might be willing to come on our show. Oh, she didn't say that.
I talk to Spanky all the time, and she's the most wonderful person.
You think
person.
She would actually come on?
Oh, absolutely. She
now,
would
is she
love
married?
To. No.
Oh, that is so cool. Now I really want her to come on.
Okay.
Spanky, I've got a question for you. Do you have a boyfriend? Okay. No, I just got a follow-up question. How serious are you? Okay. Of course, I'm still in the 60s.
Well, she would be very excited about that, I'll tell you.
Not as excited as I would be, but let's move on. Now, you were mentioning, Lori, that you had become a Christian. When in this time did that happen? How did that happen? Well, we'll begin that now, and then we'll carry that into our next hour, because I know we've got some detailed stories about that. But I think it's always interesting what happens with rock stars. And, you know, a couple of things we all expect. Every rock star has some kind of deal with drugs. And what's the thing about rock stars with buying these private planes and crashing them? This isn't rocket science. I would just think if you're out there, let me just give you a little advice. If you're a rock star, don't buy yourself a private plane. If you fly a plane, don't become a rock star, because those things don't mix too well, do they? But some rock stars become Christians. What happened with you?
Oh, wow. you know, I had been with the Mamas and Papas for about 2 years. And when Mackenzie Phillips had her baby and took her time to be with her son, and she came back. And I knew that at the time when I was first hired on that it was going to be a temporary job. I didn't think that it would even go on as long as it did. And then I came back home and, you know, I was floating on air with just being able to sing with the Mamas and Papas, traveling all over the world and living the high life. It was an amazing time. And when I got back to San Diego, well, where do you go from there? You go back to the lounges? Do you go back to doing what? And at this point, I had watched a television show about this woman who was a mud wrestler and sold cars. <That's> I thought to myself, I could sell cars. I'll try that. So I got a job selling cars. I sold cars at several car lots until I landed.
And you said these were new cars, right?
Yeah, brand new cars.
Yeah, because if it was used cars, we probably couldn't let you continue to be on our show. We don't like used car salesmen around here. Fair deal, Dan. Now look at me while I talk to you.
We don't like used cars. Well, there you go.
New cars.
And so, you know, here I was trying to figure out really what to do with my life. And I went back to playing in the clubs. And it was really, to me, a step down, going back to singing and doing the cover music. But I continued to do drugs and to party. And it got pretty much out of hand until one night I had just been up all night long. Partying and it was just an all-night binging night, smoking marijuana and doing cocaine and drinking and smoking cigarettes.
Just in case anybody doubted that she sang with a 60s band, she's giving you her resume.
I'm giving you my drug resume.
You believe us now, huh?
Yes. And children, if you're listening to this, please do not try that at home or ever,
yeah,
ever
you kids,
in your life.
Stay in school, okay?
Stay in school and don't ever do that because it wrecks your brain. And I was literally getting ready to turn the light out when the light itself started to dim. And I started to just feel this heavy pressure in my chest. And my heart started pounding so hard and so fast. It was just, I think it probably was pounding 200 beats a minute. It was going so fast. And it just sunk me down to my knees. And in the meantime, we had some friends who were Christians, and they kept telling us, you know, you need to have a relationship with the Lord. Well, I was brought up Catholic. You know, I was saved as far as I was concerned. I know about the Lord. You don't need to tell me about God. And I was actually offended by it. However, this particular night when I was really literally forced to my knees was when the first time I cried out to the Lord. And I said, God, help me. I really believed I was going to die. And it was like my life flashed before me. Everything. Just I had the success. I had all these things happen with my life. And here all of a sudden, you know, this is going to come to an end right here and right now over drugs. And I prayed. I said, God, if you're really real, please help me get through this and help me get through the night. And I promise you tomorrow morning, I'm going to quit everything. I'm never going to do this again. And I made it through the night. And when I woke up the next morning, I was fine. And I just totally said, wow, cool. Well, I probably would have lived anyway. There's that part.
Right,
you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. We make bargains with God, and then when things get better, we look for the fine print.
But something kind of really amazing happened, and I had called my doctor that morning, and I knew I wasn't going to get him because it was Saturday, and I had known about my doctor being a Seventh-day Adventist. And I know that that was his holy day because he explained to me that that's the day he goes to church. It's his Sabbath. And so I happened to call his office just, I don't know why. Why did I call his office? I couldn't tell you why. Picked up the phone, 9 o'clock in the morning, and instead of getting his answering service, which I was sure I was going to get, his voice comes on. This was a doctor named Dr. Brassington out in Lemon Grove.
Well, if you can get a Seventh-day Adventist to answer the phone on a Saturday, you know God's doing some real big-time miracles.
And I said, Dr. B, that's what we call him, Dr. B. And he said, Lori, is that you? And I was like, yes. And I immediately started crying. And he said, what's wrong? And I told him, I said, I've been lying to you all this time, all these sinus infections, all these things that I've been going through. And I said, I've been addicted to cocaine for 10 years. And last night something happened to me, and I told him about it. And he said, well, I don't know. He said, it sounds to me like you had a drug-induced heart attack. And that just set me off. I just started to cry. And I had no health insurance. I had nothing. He says, well, here, this is what I want you to do. And I thought he was going to, like, send me off to some, you know, place to get a test. And I was explaining to him, I don't have any health insurance. What do I do? He says, you need to turn your life over to the care of Jesus. You need to turn your life over to Christ. And at that moment, it was just a pinnacle statement that he made, because it was just like I had remembered that promise I had made to God that night before. And it was just like, boom. It was like God was there.
So in a way, you'd almost forgotten about God, and then this just brought it back to you.
Right.
Hearing this
exactly.
From
it was like God was not going to let me forget.
Wow.
And I haven't ever since.
This is a wonderful story, and we want to continue it. There is another hour of the Bob Siegel Show coming up. And Lori and Chuck are going to continue to be our guests on that hour, but it's on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. So we will see you just a few numbers down the dial.